We're looking tonight at this particular topic here, 5 steps for success in service to God. The objective of all teaching and training is growth and development and maturity. Now, the same is true of the teaching and training that believers receive. I want us to, first of all, this isn't the text for the lesson, but I would like us to go over to Ephesians chapter 4 and look at verses 11 through 16. I think what we see here is the goal of what Jesus and the apostles and all set in order. And you see all this, the fruition of everything and the plan and how everything's just supposed to interact and all work together. In Ephesians chapter 4, starting verse 11 through verse 16, that he himself gave some to be apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. That we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness by which they lie in wait to deceive. But, speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Now each word in those passages are describing success for the Lord, and each individual must recognize and realize personal responsibility in being successful on their own accord. So how can this be done? That's what we're going to consider tonight. Now here's the text we're looking at. It's found in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 12 through 27. And we'll be making a few comments on this particular passage as we go along in the lesson tonight. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 12, if others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me. For it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is me, if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law to God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown.
Therefore, I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified.
There's a lot of things in there. We're just going to make a few points. But the first one that I'd like for us to consider as we're looking at this, we're going to be looking at 5 points, actually, or 5 steps for success in service of God. The first one is found in verse 12, where he says that he endures or suffers, if you will, all things. Jesus, of course, is our example in enduring all things. You can find out some mention of this if you take a look real quick over at 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 21 through 24. It says now, and he's speaking to those he's writing to, it's like you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God, since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart, having been born again, not of corruptible seed, but incorruptible through the word of God, which lives and abides forever. And I just read chapter 1. Excuse me. Chapter 2. I will do that about every time in Peter for some reason. Well, we're talking about Christ's suffering, and it says in verse 21 of chapter 2, that you were called because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. He committed no sin, nor guile was found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. He himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sin, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. We can all see this and realize that, yes, Jesus suffered things. He's our example in suffering. He did not, retaliate or act out. He suffered. He endured certain things. He endured all things. And we are told that this is something we should do as his example teaches us. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1 says that you need to be followers of me or imitators of me as I imitate Jesus. Now, this is the thing that we want to focus on here when we think about this. Now, I know that we've all heard these kinds of things at some time or another, probably several times. But we're to endure also. And yet, there are so many who fail so easily. It seems as though a lot of people can fall just almost at the drop of the hat. And there are some that just can't stand the heat whenever there's a time that calls for a little bit of enduring certain things. And there's others who might love the world so much that they can't endure much and they desert the cause. Do you remember Demas in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10? Says he loved this present world, and as he had departed from Paul, not keeping company with him. I think we understand that he didn't mean he had just deserted Paul. That's what happened. But it wasn't just deserting him. He was deserting the Lord's cause. And apparently it's because he loved the Lord, loved the world more than the Lord. I think we can understand that kind of thing. Demas couldn't endure. He couldn't see it through. And there's a lot of people that just can't do that. But we are told to endure all things. Now, not just some things, but all things. Now, if you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, once again, we can find here in verses 15 through 17, among a number of other things, Paul says, it would be better for me to die. Paul wasn't afraid of death. As a matter of fact, in Philippians, it says, I'm kind of stuck between two. It's like he's saying there, our expression is, I'm like between a rock and a hard place. He said, it would be fine to me and it would be advantage to me, it would be gain for me to go and to be with the Lord. But then he said, also I realize if I stay here, I can have a great advantage with other individuals in teaching them. So that's kind of what he's saying here as well. But you see that one of the things that he was interested in is in preaching the gospel. The interesting thing about the Apostle Paul is you see a number of things that he did in his preaching.
it's true that he was a tent maker. Most Jewish boys learned a trade from their father. Like with Jesus, his father was a carpenter. His earthly father was a carpenter. It's very likely that Jesus also was a carpenter. People stepping out of that kind of thing, you know, like being a carpenter and becoming, I don't know, a fisherman, well, that was just extremely rare. It happened, but not very often. And so if Paul was a tent maker and he had this trade, he had learned it someplace. He didn't learn it in the school he went to. But he would have learned it more than likely from his father being a tent maker or in the tent making business. And there were occasions whenever he worked as a tent maker to provide for his needs while he was preaching. And it looks like he did that when he was at Corinth. He didn't take any support from Corinth. He may have worked as a tent maker. He also says that he robbed other churches, taking wages from them that I might, you know, serve you. So other churches supported him while he was at Corinth on an occasion too. Now what this tells you is that there are a lot of ways in which this can be done. And he hints in here that even I could have taken, you know, support from you at Corinth. So he had several options to choose from, none of which are mandatory, and any of those are just merely what they are, options to do in certain circumstances. And you know, I've done all three. I've had support come from other congregations. I've been supported by the congregation that I was preaching to, that one. And then there have been occasions in which I have had secular employment and used that to support the family and everyone else. I've done all that kind of thing, and I think I'm not unique. I think there's lots of preachers that have done that as well. My son does that, and my son-in-law has done that as well. But this was all because Paul was interested in preaching the gospel. I like what happened with the Apostle Paul. His work, actually, his service, it actually began immediately. You see, when he's recounting things in Acts chapter 26, there with Agrippa, and he's basically telling him of some of the events that led up to his conversion. And one of the things that happened after his conversion, you see in chapter 26 and verse 19, he says, "Therefore, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision." And one of the things that was said to him was that I'm going to send you out to the Gentiles, that you'll open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who are sanctified by faith in me. That's what's in verse 18. Well, I wasn't disobedient to that. And we find out, if we look at things, whenever he was at his actual conversion took place earlier in Acts chapter 9, you see in verse 20, it says straight away, immediately, he started preaching. And so you can tell that this was someone who was very zealous in doing this, and he was ready, and he pretty well just stayed ready all the time. And when he says this, it would be better for me to die, I think also there's the idea here, he'd rather die than be a part of anything else. There may have been a lot of other things that Paul had performed in his life. He may have been in a teaching capacity, a number of other things. We find out he was embarrassed and regretted greatly some of his work as a very zealous Pharisee in persecuting Christians. He may have enjoyed that, but later on that wasn't the case. But there might be a lot of things, but you know, preaching the gospel was the most important thing to Paul. He felt almost a necessity to do this. He says, "Woe is me if I preach not the gospel of Jesus Christ." You know, I think that's just such a terrific statement. Now, it's very easy to say, "Well, that's an apostle." Or to say, "Well, that's a preacher." And, "Well, they're expected to think that way and feel that way." But really, we all ought to be thinking and feeling that way. That we all ought to have this interest in us to always be teaching others. Paul recognized that his value in service was by preaching to others. You know, I've met a lot of preachers who are able to do a lot of things. And it's kind of amazing sometimes to see how some of them had perhaps greater strengths in some areas than others. I always thought the man I always consider my mentor was he was just a terrific writer. He could write things and they would be so clear and concise and right to the point. And I just greatly admired his ability to do that. And in teaching a Bible class and being able to stand there and to field questions that you're unprepared for, that's not easy. He was really good at this. And being able to remain even-tempered and to give everything, you know, the due measure of interest and respect and other things like that it deserved. He was good, great at that and everything. But when it came to preaching, he kind of fell by the wayside. And you're surprised at that. Then there are other men who have been great as preachers, and I know another man who's, boy, just terrific, I think. I could listen to him every day. But he's the first one to admit, when it comes to writing something and so on, that he's just a failure at it. And he just, so it doesn't always happen like this. So what happens is, a lot of times, people realize where their strengths are and where they can have the most good and actually be of the greatest value. And I think that's the case with Paul. You know, woe unto me if I don't preach the gospel, because that's where his real value was in preaching to others. And I think we would all agree that that was the case with him. 1 Corinthians chapter 19 and verse 9 is where we go to next, where he says, I have made myself servant unto all. He actually starts there in verse 19, and it goes down through, verse 23, just about. And it's amazing sometimes as to how these words can be twisted around to mean something that they don't mean at all. Now, it's true, first of all, when you think about the idea of service, the greatest example of service that we could have is with Jesus Christ. He says himself, I came here to serve. He was having some problems with his disciples in Matthew chapter 20. Some of them thought that there ought to be some kind of a pecking order among the 12. That some of them ought to have just a little bit more, importance than others. But Jesus says, now that might be the way some people do it. He says that might be the way it is among the Gentiles. But he says, it's not going to be that way among you. And he goes on to talk about this and says that the greatest of all is not the one who is served, but the one who comes to serve. And to nail down his point, finally, you get to verse 28 when he says this, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Certainly giving his life as a ransom for many is the greatest example of service on the part of Jesus. But let us not miss the part that says that he did not come to be served, but to serve. You don't see any place anywhere where Jesus is demanding that others serve him. I understand that some people did. I understand that there's a woman that brought in a very, very costly, I think the King James calls it a box, but it was a flask of an ointment and anointed the feet, hair of Jesus. Another woman washed his feet with her, with the tears, and you see all these things happening, and a number of people, yes, they're serving Jesus, but he didn't come in and demand it. He didn't think it was expected of him. And one time, whenever he came to a house, and there was no one there to wash their feet, no servant to wash the feet of those who entered the house. That included the Lord, by the way. And what did he do? He's the one, got a towel, got the water, and began washing the disciples' feet. He didn't go over there with the towel and the water, see, and take it over there to somebody like, Thaddeus, and say, here you go,
You ought to wash my feet. That wasn't his point in doing that. And even at the conclusion of that business of washing feet, he tells them, if you understand, if you know what this means, happy are you. Well, it was a lesson on service, wasn't it? It's exactly what Jesus had said in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28. Paul operated, I think we would say, successfully and all the time under the words of Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, where he was quoting Jesus saying, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And a person has a mind of service and made myself servant unto all, yeah, well, you'd be willing more to give than to receive. And yet, I think sometimes there are occasions whenever we gather together and there may be someone somewhere who expects to be served. I'm here. Here I am now. Where's everybody at? I hear complaints. Well, this didn't happen and that didn't happen and this wasn't shown my way and all these kinds of things. I've heard all those kinds of complaints that come about. Have you ever heard any of them? What are you expecting? Fanfare? You know, throw out the red carpet or something like that? No, we come here, we're to come here to worship, and we come here oftentimes to have a serve in worship, not to be served ourselves. And we ought to realize that, yes, that's what we're seeking to do, even outside of our gathering together. We're expected to serve, not to be served. It's really a matter of this. Some have the idea, well, it's not what can I give, it's what can I get. I think sometimes that even goes into the idea of prayer. We've studied prayer for a good little bit in Bible class. Brendan's done a real good job on that. And I think sometimes in prayer that's what it is, you know. It's all what I'm going to get out of this. Not what I can give. Not praise. Not devotion. Not honor. Not respect in prayer. What can I get? Or just almost demanding, you know, God, this is what I want. You better get busy at it. That kind of thing. And that's, of course, you know, just completely offline. We miss real opportunities to advance the gospel when we forget that we are to serve and not be served. Now, our fourth point is, Paul saying here, I have become all things to all men. Now, Paul understood the preferences and opinions, and out of respect, he tried not to violate them. He would go as far as he could. And really that's what he's saying down in there. When he says, you know, I made myself servant to all in verse 19, that I might win. I became as a Jew to those who were Jews, and to those who were without the law, I became like out without law, and so on. And I became weak so that I might win the weak. I've done all things. I've become all things. I've gone as far as I can in doing this. I'm afraid sometimes we don't go very far at all, if anything at all. Too many times somebody will say that there's something or another that, you know, is out of line, or it's a problem, or there's a number of people with this and that and the other issue and everything. And you know, too many times, rather than try to be considerate, try to understand things and some people's opinions and other things like that, I think sometimes the attitude is, well, that's too bad. They'll have to get over it. Now, tell me how that's compatible with what you read in the Scriptures. Tell me how that's compatible with things like being compassionate and other things. There are a lot of things that can happen that we might not necessarily agree with. But we ought not to just burr up and act like, well, I'm just going along here, but you're going to know about it, and I'm going to drag my feet, and I'm going to grumble and mumble around about it as much as I can. I don't know where that's at in the Scriptures. And if it is anywhere in the Scriptures, it's pretty well saying, you know, you shouldn't really do that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 23, down through verse 33, Paul talks about this very thing, meat sold in the marketplace.
We've got people that think, well, you just can't do that at all. That would just be wrong as wrong can be. Well, the meat that was sold in the marketplace was meat that was, first of all, sacrificed to some god, some idol. The marketplace, every place in the marketplace was some kind of a temple. The meat market would have been a temple to some god. And the meats that were brought in there, in their minds, they were giving this meat to these gods. And they would cut this up. And what wasn't used in whatever ceremony they had, if they had any at all, was then sold to other individuals. And those who were Christians at Corinth would buy their meat. And this was a problem with some folks. Like today. Oh, it shouldn't eat it, just stay away from that altogether. And Paul says, you know, there are some folks that can eat this with a mind of doing this, and no problem. He says, if any of those who do not believe invite you to dinner and you desire to eat, to go, eat whatever is set before you, asking no question for conscience sake. But now if they say to you this was offered to idols, don't eat it. Now, watch now. Don't eat it for your sake and violating your conscience. That's not what he says. He says, don't eat it for the sake of the one who told you. And for conscience sake, for their conscience sake, not for yours. So oftentimes, brethren just miss this point altogether. And they think it's what's all about me. No, don't eat it for the sake of the other person, not for you. And he goes on down through this, and he says, what am I going to do? Am I going to be judged by, why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? Good question. But too many times today, that's what happens. Now, when Paul says he became all things for all men, you know, you'd be surprised every once in a while, somebody will come along and they'll arm themselves, you know, they'll kind of gird themselves up with this idea of being all things to all people, and they'll come along and they'll ask a question. Well, I'd ask this question. Someone says, well, what about now somebody that's in the bar? They're in the bar, sitting up there at the bar, and they're drinking. So if you're going to become all things for all men, you know what? You can go in the bar and sit down next to a person and start drinking with them. I didn't think that's what Paul's saying. If it's not the bar, how about if they're over there at the strip club? Huh? I'll go in there and sit down to there, and I'll sit at the strip club right next to them so I can win them over to Christ. Good luck with that. But sometimes people get carried away on this, and they think that's what it means. Is that what Paul said? Really? Paul was staying within New Testament limits here. He did not become a drunkard to save the drunkard. He didn't go to a place and violate the sanctity of his eyes, if you will. Really, what you're seeing here, and this is the important thing, this is the important thing to remember when you look at these passages. This shines out over everything else. When he says, I became all things to all men, there's something that he couldn't do, shouldn't do, and wouldn't do. There's not to be any sin. So we think about all these scenarios, we come up with all these ideas and examples about what to do if a person's doing this and what should I do and blah, 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 blah. And you know, we never think about this. Well, is it going to be something where am I going to sin? I think sometimes that doesn't enter the picture. It's we think there's a larger and a braver and a better thing and all that and everything. All right, fine. Make all those arguments. How about this one? Is there any sin there? And if there is going to be sin there, I can't do that. So that's what Paul's saying. I became weak. I might save the weak, but I didn't become weak in sin. I became all things to all men, but I didn't participate in sin, but I might be able to save sinners. See? That's how it works. And I think that we can all understand that. Now, the last step is an important one. It's in verse 27 where it says, I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. There's a translation that either does or it used to say that I buffet my body or I keep under my body New American Standard has, I think. But I discipline my body. Now, Paul earlier, right before those verses, had been talking about an athlete. And he talks about how the athlete trains himself and other things like that. And when he talks about buffeting the body, the literal translation is, I bruise my body. You know, he's still talking about athletics. And he just left talking about boxing. And there's a real good possibility here, probability, that that's what he continues to talk about. I buffet my body. Here's the thing. Sometimes there are times whenever, you know, we're not in subjection. And you know what happens in a boxing match, and there are two individuals, and here they are boxing, and the one, like it or not, is trying to put the other one into subjection. You know? Trying to get that other one down, or give him to, you know, cry out and say uncle, or whatever it is, you know, get over there in the corner, throw in the towel, however that is. The one is trying to get the other into subjection. Now, they had different rules for boxing back in those days than they do now. Kind of like those boxing matches that they used to have years ago in the old time Westerns. When they had some kind of a fight and somebody got down on the ground, they were not so chivalrous as to let somebody get back up. If they started to get back up, you know what they did? Boy, they hit him again. They didn't give him a chance to get back up. And that happened in athletic events. That would have happened in the Greek games of Paul's time. Everybody there would have understood what he was talking about. Here's this person that's been brought into subjection. And they try to get out of that subjection. What do you do? Knock that old strong will back down again. What's the point? Well, you and I are supposed to be in subjection. And you know what? We're supposed to keep our body. I discipline my body. Not somebody else, but me. And then if I've got it down and tried to get back up, what should I do? Put it back down there again. You'll have to work at it. Here's his point here. And Paul was determined to beat down all unholy appetites. You know, we actually make choices. Romans chapter 6, verse 16, you choose whom you will serve. Obedience unto righteousness, or disobedience to unrighteousness. You know how that kind of... But we make these choices. It would be nice sometimes if more people had the spirit of David. Now, David did a lot of wrong things with Bathsheba and the things that followed after that. But finally, when it was pointed out to him that this was all his doing, he made good on it. He repented of this. It'd be good sometimes if we had somebody like David who could truly be sorry for his sins and show it and lament over it and admit, I just made a bad decision. I just did something that was wrong. But again, that's sometimes hard to do. But we make choices. We need to admit that we were wrong. And when we make wrong choices, you know, don't do it again. Keep those old unholy appetites, you know, in subjection. That's the whole part of it. Self-control is a key element in rendering successful service. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. For you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. You and I make the decision. You and I have practiced the self-control. You and I are expected to set your mind on things above. Nobody else can do that for us. We do it. We make a choice to do this kind of thing. Well, many fail to do this. Why? Well, is it possible they do this because there's little self-control? Sometimes that isn't even thought of anymore. The idea of self-control, where did it all go? We live in a time where it seems like there's hardly any self-control at all. But then now, Some don't have self-control because, they don't even try to have self-control and are willing to just live lives as though there is no checks and balances whatsoever and that there would be nothing that they can do. Well, by the way of conclusion, there are five steps here to being a successful and prospering servant of Christ. You endure all things. You recognize your value, just like Paul did. You become a servant. You become all things. You do everything that you can. Not any sin involved, but you do everything you can. And then finally, you need to be in subjection to God. So we need to begin today to do all we can to be a mature Christian, able to build others up in the most holy faith. We invite anyone today who's not a Christian to become one by obeying the gospel of Christ. If you believe in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, if you would repent of your sins, confess Him before men, be baptized, become a child of God tonight. If you are such, fallen by the wayside, you haven't been doing what you should be doing, we actively encourage you to turn your life around and to begin being an active part in service to God and let these kinds of things assist you that your service ought to be what it should. Anyway, take your song books, turn to the song that's been selected. This is the right time. This is the right place. If you're subject, why don't you come forward while together we stand and sing.